Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same thing.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. Whoa, hey, that's a little heavy metal Tech Talk right there. Oh my gosh, it is Saturday, March 7th. Thanks everybody for showing up today. I've been told that I need to start letting people know what the date is. Not because you may not know, but because you know what we do rebroadcast sometime. Occasionally, I'm not going to be here, and what we do then is we play a little recorded stuff. And if I don't let you know what day it is, some people think that stuff is live, and so it's not. But today's live. We're here. It's March 7th. We're ready to go. Gonna have a good day today. I don't know that we're gonna have our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki on with us, but I'm pretty sure we're gonna get. What am I saying here? Listen to this. I think maybe Dave's decided that he wants to be a part of the show. Mr. Sanaki? Oh, there he is. you took a break from driving around Canada in your new vet, and or are you in the Corvette? Does it include Wi-Fi?
No, that's technology it doesn't have. Good morning, everybody. You're giving me a hard time about promptness. Is that what you're saying?
You're so consistent. I was just surprised. The usual way things work is I come, I sit down at the board, I'm getting my music queued up for the intro, and then Dave is on the line, and I get to bring him in and manage the whole process. And you weren't there today, Dave, and I.
Well, I don't know if you got my latest email. We got in late last night from Jamaica.
Oh wow! You guys are just all over the place, man. That is, I didn't realize that that the Corvette could make it there. How did you work that out?
That would be great.
Yeah. No, I did not see your most recent email. I apologize. I'm sure that's my fault. I didn't. I was busy actually trying to think of something to say this morning. So I look at my emails too much. Jamaica. Oh my gosh. You're Jamaican me crazy, man. You're all over the place. Awesome.
Yeah, Jamaica's this time of year. It's a good place to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what time of year is it not really? I've never been, so I can't speak to it. My wife, her family used to go there fairly frequently. I don't know. You know, beaches, beautiful beaches patrolled by men with Uzis. Something about that doesn't get
me
really.
Not where we were. First of all, that's – I've never seen that in Jamaica. I've been to Jamaica half a dozen times at least, and I've never – There can be security on the beach. This particular resort, security was very discreet.
Okay. So. Maybe, that might have been like an 80s thing or something. I know that's when my wife was going with her family.
Mm.
Those are the stories that she tells me. It's all hearsay for me. I don't really have any experience. I did see men walking around with Uzis in San Paulo when I was there, but I was not on a beach vacation. These were gentlemen who were protecting large sums of cash wandering around the city. Anyway,
there's some risk to going to Jamaica, but it's not as bad as going to Detroit.
Yeah, you know, I actually absolutely believe that. I'm sure you're right. I actually haven't heard of anything. In fact, major security crime, anything coming out of Jamaica. As long as I can remember. And you just can't say that about almost any other place that people go to for vacation. So, I absolutely believe it. Well, that's wonderful. How long were you there for?
Only 4 days.
Long enough to get a nice veneer on your Canadian tan. And,
yeah, long enough to get burned and stupid. These winter getaways in a sunny climate, it's an unbelievable shock. You just can't believe sunshine and green exist.
Yeah. I got to bring up those vitamin D, get that vitamin D cranking in your body there. We haven't done that for a little while ourselves. And we talk about it frequently, getting out and doing something really fun and sun and all that in the middle of winter. It can be shocking though to the body. Can be shocking. Absolutely. we should probably talk about technology.
Hello.
That's shocking. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can now, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. Sorry. I was going to say, we should talk about something shocking in technology, though. Technology related. I don't know if you saw this when you were out in Jamaica, but this was big news actually around the world, of course, because the U.S. financial markets are important globally still. Apple is kicking AT&T to the curb on the Dow. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is no longer going to use AT&T as a reference stock. Instead, they're going to be using Apple. I think that's okay. I think that makes sense.
First of all, what's the company got to do for that to happen? Apple's worth $744 billion.
Yeah.
Dollars.
Yeah.
That's equivalent to Saudi Arabia's budget.
Yeah. Yep.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. And they're on their way to being the first $1 trillion company ever, yeah. I heard. So
yeah. And in cash alone, they're sitting on $178 billion in cash.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the Dow, though, is not just based on, what's the most expensive companies out there? What are the largest companies out there that are publicly shared? They really do try to make the average, representative of the stock market as a whole. It's usually based upon these, blue chip stocks that have been around and that are stable enough that they can go out. Actually, in fact, as it turns out, Apple is one of the lowest priced stocks on the Dow, even though they have the largest market cap of any company on there. The closest one is Exxon, comes in second at a bit over half at $360 billion. You mentioned the $740 billion. They're at like $360. So it's, I guess it makes sense. AT&T has only been on there since 1999 also, which is something else I did not realize.
I didn't know that. I did not know that either. That's insane, isn't it?
And yeah.
They kind of waited till the game was all over to put them in.
pretty much. Well, and I think that's part of the reason why it was easy to bump AT&T out of there for them as well. They do have a number of technology companies already, but also to a number of telecom companies. And so that's the other thing they try to do, of course, is keep the average somewhat balanced as far as industry and everything else, so that it's not specific to one, one category of stocks. And, there it is. The stock is going up in price as soon as this occurred, as soon as people started talking about that. I think it went up like $2 or something, close to its lifetime record high. So
I think it's about $128 a share or something like that, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I don't have the number in front of me, but that sounds about right. So yeah. So if you got a couple extra $100 to throw, I guess Apple's not a bad place to put that money. maybe it's too late now. I don't know.
But you were one of the guys, and many of us feel that way, is that Apple's lost its edge since Steve Jobs has been gone.
Yeah, I do still feel that, and there's been a lot of sort of, vies for the throne coming along. And of course, the Samsung Galaxy 6 is coming out. People are raving about that in comparison to the iPhone 6. Not quite as excited about it. Apple, though, they're not going away. It's sort of like, the only thing that's kind of happened, though, and I think this is sort of a natural progression, of course, is that they're no longer, and people still want to believe, like, oh, I am so cool and, hip and all that because I've got all Apple stuff. It's not that anymore. You're not being a rebel buying Apple stuff anymore. Clearly, you're one of the sheeple, and I think that's a difficult transition for companies to make sometimes. You know, Microsoft did kind of always had that. And always wanted to be, we're the business solution sort of company. You know, we're, if you want something that's, you know, best practice, top of the market, going to give you the most bang for the buck features and so on, Microsoft, we're going to help you with your OS and your, also your
and
offices.
Their flexibility. I mean, Apple's always been about the walled garden and such.
Yes.
But, yeah. But also, I haven't looked in a while, Apple's demographics are astonishing. For I mean, it's, you know, it's people with money like Apple products.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah. You gotta have money if you're gonna have Apple products. There's no two ways about it. You know, it's not like it's like me. It's a little poor old me. I have one Apple product. I do have an Apple product. I have an iPad. iPad 2. I'll proudly say, and I love it. I use it, and you know what? That thing is rock. Solid. I got to say, I brutalize that thing. I've got it on with the screen up doing something, whether it's music, reading books, playing games, email, whatever. Probably, I got to say, on close to like 10 hours a day, something like this. I don't know how much. I'll have to track it sometime. It's a lot because I read at night, you know, and so that's when I turn that on. When I get up in the morning, I don't bring my laptop out and start reading the news on my laptop. I've got my iPad in front of me with my, with my All Bran and a poached egg. You know, that's what I've got. That's what I've got in front of me. Middle of the day, I need a break. What do I pull out? I'm pulling out the iPad. So I got to say good things about that. But looking at buying a new iPad, it just gives me sticker shock, and I cringe away from it every single time. I can't do it. I can't bring myself to put that kind of money down for it when there's other options.
So it's sort of evolved as from the cutting edge of innovation, maybe, to a status symbol.
Yeah,
a little bit. But you're saying it's incredibly useful, and you're talking about a two.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
That's pretty. That's not how many years old is that?
Three, four years old, I guess.
That's longevity.
Yeah.
That's for gadgets. That's a ton of longevity and value. Yeah. You're talking about the initial cost being high. But that's if you've got a device that serves you that well, that long, that's good value.
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah, I absolutely would not complain about that and the value given. No, I didn't even buy it new. I bought mine used. So because somebody else was put down whatever money for an iPad 2.5 or 3 or whatever the heck they had out at the time. So it's just like you never buy a car new on the lot. You know, you always wait till somebody drives it for a week and then all of a sudden it's going to move or something. Then you buy it. I would agree with that. The thing that's frustrating, well, other than just I am a penny pincher and stingy, but the other thing that does frustrate me is you're so locked into the interface, you can't really adjust it. I'm so used to being able to just move things around and do what I want to do with my Android phones, with my Android tablets. I can't do things like I did. I think I mentioned this on air many times. I've got a Sony Vaio that's like twice the age of that iPad. It's probably, I guess it's got to be at least 7 years old, something like this. Was my wife's machine originally, was an XP. We upgraded it to 7. It then blew up and fell apart. I put $25 into it for a new solid state drive, threw Ubuntu on it.
Oh yeah.
And it's brilliant. It runs faster than most of the newer laptops that I play with that are trying to chug through Windows 8. It's just really a nice operating system. You can't do that with an iPad. Yeah, I mean, you can jailbreak them, but it's not something you can do without a lot of thought and effort.
Well, it doesn't sound like you need to do it.
No.
The reason you went through all those modifications is because it no longer served your needs.
Yeah.
Right? The Vaio.
Yeah.
As it stood. So you know, and I'm, it really wasn't that much change that you did. You put Windows 7 on it, then you put a new solid state drive on it, then you went with another operating system. It wasn't that extensive.
Yeah.
But you modified it to suit your needs. You haven't had to do that with the iPad.
Yeah, well, I haven't had to, but I also haven't been able to. But you know, all that being said, I don't have anything against the Apple and the Apple iPad, and I'm happy to see them doing well. It's just gonna be interesting to see how they transition into a new state for themselves. And so far, they're doing well with it. It'll be interesting too to see, of course. Now they're not a telecom provider, so you know how yet they're able to, well, yeah, this is true. And Google also, you know, Google's not on that DAO, but Google now has just recently talked about, they just came out, now they've been doing this in Britain for a little while, I thought this was very interesting, they are going to be offering a comparative pricing web site for insurance, so that you can look at, first they're going to start with auto insurance, but then they're going to move on to other types of insurance. And this is, I think, kind of a big deal. From what I'm reading, this just has met with a ton of resistance, of course, from that industry. It's been very successful though in the UK, and it's just one more step on the way of giving people more information to make the best choices and decisions. I wish this had been happening, you know, 10 years ago, especially when you talk about health insurance and other things, you know, making this whole process a little bit easier with data, I think is a great thing.
Well, Google will probably do a better job than the U.S. government.
No comment, sir.
would you classify that as a disruptive thing or just better data?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say this is disruptive. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it depends on your definition of disruptive. Is it going to disrupt some of the insurance operations, the auto insurance operations, the way that they market? I think, hopefully, that would be my hope, is that, yes, I think anytime you've got an environment where there has been a lack of information and a lack of ability for the consumer to fully understand what it is they're buying and what their options really are, and then all of a sudden you shine a light on that, that's disruptive. I mean, it's going to make it should make it hopefully tougher for insurance companies that have, not that they've been necessarily making money, you know, inappropriately, but perhaps unfairly by offering a limited slate of options that don't really fit what the consumer needs, but come at a slightly higher price tag too than what they would necessarily need to pay. And I think some of that's going to hopefully fall away when we can do this easy comparison and see what's really out there. It enhances competition, and I'm just a big fan of enhancing competition in most of our industries, but particularly those ones that kind of come in those walled gardens like you were talking about.
Yeah, I think that would be really nice. That would be I think that's the natural. If we really want to bring down prices for things like insurance and healthcare, I think competition or just better information about what's available. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a consumer reports model for you know, procedures and hospitals and doctors and that sort of thing? Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
And some, they're trying to put some of that stuff together too. And I think that's also going to help and to make a difference as well. And every time that comes up though, you know, you hear the screaming on both sides. On the one side, it's people like us that are, you know, directly affected. And you can look at some of the pricing now. I think Wisconsin, in fact, is one state that is starting to make a lot of their basic medical services pricing information available so that you can take a look and say, okay, if I get a knee replacement in Madison, what will that cost me versus doing it at Milwaukee General? You know, what are the difference of prices? And all of a sudden you can see there's like these insane, dramatic differences in the cost between those places. Literally, and they're not like emergency services. So you could choose and say, What? No, I'm not going to pay whatever. I'll pay, you know, 1/10 of that by driving an hour. I'm okay with that. But the thing of it is, but then, of course, you hear the screaming on the other side, and you've got, you know, the Milwaukee Generals and the Madison hospitals saying, oh, wait a second, though, you've got to understand the reason that price differential exists is because we provide all of these other services that are at a far discounted level. It kind of goes back to that old cable TV sort of argument, as you got to pay for the 150 channels that you don't care about because because otherwise they wouldn't exist, you know, for the one guy that does want to watch basket weaving with your toy poodle at 2 a.m.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You can have
that
them help you.
Great.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, but you know, you talk about competition and pricing and so on, and of course, Comcast is back in the news again. They're up to their old tricks.
What did they do now, Michael?
Oh boy. You know, it's not as bad as some of the previous stuff, but this is the kind of thing that irks me to my core. And this is the kind of thing, like, the net neutrality rules are not going to help you with at the slightest. HBO Go, okay, is a great service if you like the shows on HBO, and they've got a huge lineup. It's fantastic. Game of Thrones is coming out here in April again, of course, and everybody loves Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and all the other great stuff they have in the movies. True Detective, of course, another big one. And so the thing is, though, if you're like a Time Warner Cable or a DirecTV consumer and you've got HBO, you can stream that HBO Go pretty much anywhere you want to. You can do it on your Roku. You can do it on your iPad, on your computer screen. You can do it on your PS3 and PS4 even. Unless you're on Comcast. And Comcast just has a tradition and history of confounding consumer-related people who want to actually use the services that they pay for. And here's another example. Comcast subscribers cannot stream HBO Go on their brand new PS4s. And right now, there's no immediate plans to have it happen. This was a big issue a couple of years ago. I remember, for me personally, because we had HBO Go, had Comcast. I was going into the Rokus. You know, I was getting the Rokus going. Couldn't use it on the Rokus. And very, very frustrating. No real explanation from Comcast. You know, millions of Comcast consumers and tens of thousands of Roku customers in that group, all complaining. It took years for what does not seem like it should be a extremely difficult technology to adapt to. It really just meant being able to provide a secure connecting key for a specific device type, and then allowing that to be the authenticator. And so, you know, if you've bought your PS4 and you got Comcast and you're looking forward to watching some HBO on your TV through the PS4 and don't want to have to buy another device, good luck to you. And I'm sure, though, once they merge with Time Warner Cable, all those issues are just going to go away immediately. All of a sudden, they'll become extremely customer focused, I bet, and making sure everybody's happy, right? Because that's what happens when companies merge and get enormously huge.
yeah, sure they do. Well, I can't, you know, I don't quite understand why companies like can nickel and dime you about stuff like that. Does it really work out? Can they make a business case that really does pick up the bottom line?
I think what it happens to be is you need to have this balance within a company of, as you're talking about, you know, ways that you can increase your membership, as opposed to expenses that you have to pay in order for that to happen. And one of those expenses, of course, is taking care of my customers so that I can have more of them or provide more services, which they're willing to pay for. Comcast, unfortunately for us, is in the enviable position of really not having a lot of motivation or need to focus on increasing their customer base or increasing their customer happiness, because you don't have a choice in most of the country as to what your highest speed internet provider is going to be, or even some places who your best service for cable TV, phone, and so on is going to be. And this is the thing too, of course, is they bundle all these things together. So the wonderful thing about that, of course, is they sell it to you as you're going to save X percentage because you're bundling all these things. The downside to you as a consumer is that it's very difficult to extricate yourself from those services. And when you try to get rid of even just one of them, but not the whole bundle, then you're looking at, oh, well, we're going to increase that percentage right back up because you're not in the bundle anymore. So as I said, I think the long and short of it is they don't need to care about creating new customers or expanding the opportunity that they have for making existing customers more invested in the company, and that shows by the fact that they're not willing to invest in new services. Even if this only costs them, you know, $250,000 to make this happen, and that's probably even more than it would cost, that's still $250,000 they don't have to spend. So so why would they?
Yeah, so the competition's not there. That's kind of crazy that still is the case at this point in time. That they broke up AT&T years ago because of antitrust issues,
mm-hmm.
and now it's government sanctioned territories where you don't have competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy there was this big uproar years ago about breaking up AT&T, you know, and they did, but still now these regional monopolies continue to exist.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly that. And in fact, they're not debating should we break up some of these monopolies. The debate is should we allow them to become even bigger, you know? And that's what makes me insane. Is like, no. Yeah, that's the wrong question. Don't the question is not should I let this one merge with the other one so that they're really literally own the entire country? No, you break them both up. Burn the whole place down. That's what I say. Burn it down. Yeah, start over from scratch. Yeah. You know, bulldozer, bury it, and let's start over. Hey, I should bring in our good friend Mr. Garmin, though. I'm going to see if we can connect with him. And
one of the things I sent you in the email this morning, excuse me.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, that was quick. That wasn't even a ring. He was waiting for it, man. you must be very bored today, Jay. I'm sorry, I made you wait.
It's quite all right. I never know exactly when you're going to call, so I'm just ready on standby.
Yeah, no, that is also a failing of mine. There, I wish I could just, anyways, I'm not going to get into it. Well, good morning, sir. We did hit on a lot of the major topics. We were just again bemoaning and complaining about Comcast and the monopoly that they continue to grow and all that. And I was just mentioning that if you're a big fan of Game of Thrones or True Detective or any of the others, Comcast is not going to allow HBO Go on your PlayStation 4, which is, at this point, I guess, I was just reading the PlayStations have sold something like, did I read this right? 20 million? 2 million? It was a lot. I don't know. There was a lot of them anyways. But you can't do HBO on that. HBO actually, too, though, is supposed to be doing their HBO Go solo project. Last I heard, and I haven't heard anything recently about this, and maybe you have, Jay, last I heard, they were planning on releasing that to be somewhat in sync with the start of the season 5 of Game of Thrones. Like I said,
that was my understanding, too, but they've gone kind of quiet about it. So I'm curious if they're actually going to go with that. And what they also really haven't done is released a price, which is kind of critical.
although I gotta say, it probably that's probably the least important part of the whole thing, because I gotta bet no matter what they set that price at, there's enough diehard Game of Thrones, True Detective, Bored to Death, Veep, Down and Out, whatever you throw out there, there's enough of those dyed in the wool people that they're gonna go for it. If it's the Netflix price, if it's double what you pay for Netflix and all you still get is HBO, I think there's people that'll be out there willing to do it.
Well, when it was first reported, it was that they were going to come out, you're right before Game of Thrones, sometime early April, because I think Game of Thrones debuts April 12th. So they're on the clock for this. And the rumored price was $15 a month, which is not that much more than what you pay for HBO as part of a cable subscription. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's right about that. So it's effectively the same. And I got to think every cable company in the world is just livid about that.
yep. Well, and I know the last things that I was remembering reading about it is one of the things that had held them up, of course, is that those last season episodes of Game of Thrones and True Detective brought their internal server systems, literally crashing down to the knees. The hits on the servers were so dramatic that they could not keep them going. So they made the decision at that time that if they were going to create this HBO Go, HBO Solo, I think they codenamed it Maui thing, that this was going to be an external service that they were going to contract for. Basically, co-hosting, co-lo kind of situation where they would provide the content, but the external provider would actually run all of the servers, all of the infrastructure, probably multiple locations throughout the country, and allow for the streaming to work that way. And that may have been more difficult of a process to do than they expected.
Yeah, other than Akamai, there's not, I would think, an IDN out there that's just sitting on the kind of bandwidth they're going to need for that. Now, the other reason I think HBO is willing to do this is I have a number of friends who have done this, and I suspect it's very common, is that there are people who have a very basic cable subscription, and with most places, cable contracts I'm familiar with, is that you have to have, when you sign a commitment to be in cable, you have to have some level of cable service for the length of the 1 or 2 or 3 years you're signed on, but that level can vary. Mm-hmm. And so they would turn on HBO for Game of Thrones or True Detective and then turn it off as soon as the season was over and their bill. And I'm going to bet that whenever HBO Go over-the-top service comes out, they're going to block it in year blocks. Like, you won't be able to pay month to month. It's going to be $15 a month, but you're going to either commit to, or you're going to upfront $180.
Yeah.
And you've got it. And they're just, that way they can lock in their cash flow. And that, to me, is a price most people would be willing to pay to get HBO off of it. And that also, in my opinion, is half of the two prongs that are keeping cable alive. The other half is sports. Mm-hmm. As a diehard college basketball fan, I would have given up cable long ago, except for the fact that the teams I follow are spread across over the course of the season, and I think I tracked it down like 8 or 9 different sports channels, depending on regional networks and what goes on over the course of the 40-game season. I can't cobble that together, unless I'm just going to go live in a sports bar every time a game comes on. And that's bad for my marriage.
Yeah. No, I know. And, you're right. And I think, though, too, that it's exactly what is frightening, I'm sure, to them, is that, and I've been a cable cutter for a very long time now, but absolutely, I would do exactly the same thing. If I was still invested in watching my TV through my cable company, and all of a sudden I could figure out a way that, hey, I can just get those channels that I really want. I know I have to pay for them, but gosh, everything else I can do over the air, or through Netflix, which is still cheaper than even my most basic of cable things, I would do it. I mean, I did. So I guess I can't really say I would. I did. I did do it. I was I was very happy to do it, and I still am. I haven't looked back once. That's the only thing, you're right, that I do run into is there's and I'm not much of a basketball guy, but football. I want to watch the football games. I do occasionally go out to a sports bar. It's not frequent enough that it has had any impact on my marriage yet. but I also, too, I can get a fair amount, a little bit of what I want over the air. You know, enough, anyways, enough. Or I go to a friend's house who's got it, who's willing to pay. So
it's much more manageable with football for all of the seven sports nerds that are listening to a Tech Talk show, because football, if you're in college football, it's generally speaking, it's on Saturdays. If you're NFL yeah. football, it's generally speaking on Sundays, and there are much fewer games. So, you know, you being probably a Bears fan, because I can tell from the sound of suffering in your voice, you know, you're going to get over the air Bears in Chicago, and then on the times, you know, you need to watch a different game, you know, if that's what, four or five times a season, that you're not going to get the Bears on local broadcast.
yeah, that's about it. That's about it, as a matter of fact. That's right. That's right. And honestly, that is one of the things that keeps me from being a fan of a lot of the other sports is I just don't have time for that. There's too many darn games. You know, baseball is a great example. I like watching the occasional baseball game. I love going there and seeing a baseball game, but I don't know what anything means. I don't know what game is important or matters, and it seems like most of them aren't. And there's just too many of them, and I can't, you know, which means I don't know who anybody is and who they're playing and why, and it just that's frustrating for me. I want to know a little bit. I don't need to know everything, but I want to know a little bit. I want to know a little bit about what's happening. So
yeah. Well, speaking of television, before it gets too late, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about the passing of Leonard Nimoy and the significance of the Spock character.
Absolutely. Yeah, sadly, he did pass this last week and from COPD, and it was very clear and open about the fact that it was the 30 years of smoking that killed him, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, he had a tremendous legacy in science fiction, in television. Just across the board. I don't think it can be spoken in media in general. I don't think it can be spoken highly enough of for the things that he was willing to do and did it with that sense of transparency and grace and always looking at himself and being very honest about that, which you don't see a lot in Hollywood.
Well, no, and the Spock character in particular was extremely significant on a number of levels that most casual observers don't really get. I mean, first off, you know, when you talk to especially groups of marginalized individuals, Spock was the outsider on Star Trek. You know, he was of mixed race. You know, I've spoken to a number or read from a number of mixed race science fiction and fantasy authors, most notably Tobias Bakel, who said he completely identified with Spock because, you know, he is of mixed race.
Loud.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Sorry. What was that? We lost something. Go ahead, Jay.
Well, just that Spock was, you know, he's a mixed race, so people of mixed race had, you know, ability to identify with him, especially feeling like an outsider amongst the group. You know, he was half human, but he was amongst humans, so it was different. He was of repressed emotion, so persons with social anxiety or with people on the autism spectrum who have trouble reading social cues or doing emotional interactions really identify with him. And he also, for a lot of folks, was very much the first introduction to the scientific method in a real compelling way. Mm-hmm. And he was always the voice of, you know, rigorous, you know, logical, dispassionate examination and observation. And, you know, you could actually go and get like a list of motivational posters with Spockisms on them now, which are, it's kind of striking how many really sort of key axiomatic things he sort of put out there that a lot of folks just sort of take for granted. So he was really, Leonard Nimoy himself was really a great person by every account. He may be the only person in the world who invariably got along with William Shatner, which I think alone qualifies him for sainthood. But yep. the character of Spock was bigger even than him, just in how much it meant to so many people. He was the seminal figure, you think, even more than Captain Kirk, on the seminal science fiction television show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's also the character, when it happened, at the context of time and culture, when it happened, was revolutionary. There was nothing like it on television. It was a little hard. The first run of the series only ran three seasons because it was a lot to get accustomed to, those characters, and also of course the production values on Star Trek were not high for the time at all.
No, but it was a very expensive show for the time, and that's part of what killed the third season. Is they just cut the costs to death, and you couldn't do a decent show. They also fired a bunch of the writing staff. So it was a, you know, but it was very much, you're right, ahead of the time. He was maybe the first recurring sympathetic alien character. I mean, you'd had other shows with aliens, but they were aliens. I mean, mm-hmm. they were not the ones you were supposed to sympathize with. He was an alien that was a recurring character you were supposed to identify and sympathize with, and people really did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you think about Star Trek too in that context, in that you really had a United Nations of crew going off, including individuals who, yeah, like Mr. Spock and like others, who should have been, based on those times and the time and the culture that the TV show came out of, should have been either reviled or at least held in suspicion or fear, and they were not, up to and including, you know, Captain Kirk, basically willing to, get happy with pretty much anybody that, green skin, whatever, hallucination, put in place by the big brains. Yeah, whatever it was, he was happy to be there and that they liked him. which really describes, most of my dating life too. I was just happy to be there. If somebody liked me, it didn't matter. But to be fair,
I mean, the girl with the green skin he got with was Yvonne Craig, who was also Batgirl in Batman 66. So, I mean, no matter what color Yvonne Craig was in 1966, she was still Yvonne Craig.
this is true. I think I could have been blindfolded, and that would have been all right. This is true. But it was a step in that direction where they really just hadn't gone before. It wasn't that long prior to Star Trek that you had the first black actors and actresses appearing on TV and as leads too. And so just a couple years after that, to envision that there would be a whole show based around the idea that they are going around with an entire group of lead actors of mixed race, of minority race, of other cultures, of other societies and countries that we actually were just recently at war with. But not only were they working together and acting together, but I think the most amazing thing to me is it's very rarely even remarked on. No one talks about Chekhov and says, "Oh, hey, Mr. Chekhov, do you remember? You remember when America was gonna destroy you guys? It's not like this thing. It's just there, and that's what I love about it. Is it's almost Roddenberry just made the decision like we're just going to assume everything's cool. At some point in the future, it's all cool. It's just not gonna matter anymore. And that was the vibe that he wanted to go for."
Absolutely. Well, in fact, they had to go so far as to bring a resurrected Abraham Lincoln back. I was the first person to remark on the fact that Uhura was African American. I'm like, oh, right, you guys cared about this way back in ancient times when you were dumb.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And as I said, and I think the other thing that's amazing with, Nimoy himself was that he really did, his struggles with the time and with himself were fairly out there for people to see, and you know, even through his illness and so on, and he recreated himself many times. You know, just the fact he's got two autobiographies out. The first one is "I Am Not Spock," and then the second one's called "I Am Spock." You know, it's like he really thought about himself and recreated that and made that. And made that a part of the narrative of who he was. So, you know, that's
well, cool. Yeah, his characters. Himself. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm not. Well, his character's struggle with his partial humanity was so moving and so touching and so influential. What's the guy's name? Laurie from Big Bang Theory. I guess his message. You know, you just had such an influence on our show and what we've created. So he's just been tremendously influential.
Absolutely. He is an icon. The character is an icon, and his portrayal of him will be definitive into posterity. Anytime anyone is considered emotionless or hyper-intelligent, they're sometimes just referred to as Spock. You know, it's sarcastic often, but like it is, you know, like Google has passed on well beyond just the use of Google or the company Google. It is now a verb that is separate and beyond its origins. Spock as a character, I mean, he's almost Falstaffian in his transcendence of, he's more than just Star Trek. He is an icon that represents so many things, and it's going to endure. It's already got another actor portraying him, and I'm sure someone will portray him after Zachary Quinto and so on and so forth. Spock exists now and is important because of what Lynn Nardi Boy did with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from a dramatic narrative standpoint, to have the courage to have a character, an emotionless character, quote-unquote, the bravery in doing that and the willing to take that chance in the context of the story of Star Trek, it's really astonishing.
Absolutely. It's the notion of emotionlessness and still having emotional resonance that was really, really extremely difficult to play, and he pulled it off amazingly well.
Yeah. 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 No offense to Mr. Spiner, Brent Spiner, but did it better than anybody else, really, I think.
Well, and the irony is that that's probably one of the most loved contemporary, you know, modern characters there is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
We are getting close to our timeline. You know what we need to do is, I know we need to do our geek trivia, which I got queued up here as well. And then also, too, I'm going to throw some cool sites of the week out at us this week because I do have that. But I think, you know, I think we can just speak for everyone is that it's a great loss. And although Nimoy hadn't been as directly involved with some of these projects recently, his impact and his legacy will be felt for a very, very long time, and we're better for it. We really are. It's one of those people you can say we're better for having had him involved in this world. So it was a good thing. So I get the last word.
Amen on that.
On that, I'm going to ask Jay. So what was the original structure? What DNA? We needed DNA. We needed to know what it looked like. What was originally? How did they screw that up? How did Watson and Crick get a wrong-headed idea about this?
Well, they Watson and Crick, for all of their monumental accomplishment, were actually a couple of slightly shady characters, and they sneaked a peek at Rosalind Franklin's DNA crystallography work, and they misinterpreted the appropriated data to see how much water was in the molecule of DNA, and as a result, they arrived at the same erroneous conclusion as Linus Pauling, that DNA was a triple helix, an incredibly heavy and dense and complicated molecule. And when they put together the model, it took about all of 20 minutes for it to get torn apart, not literally, just figuratively, by the observers, for being chemically impossible. this just ain't going to work. They put this forth in 1951, and it was just completely, like, you know, the how the covalent bonds work together would have just torn itself apart. It could not be. And so they were basically told at that point, you are not to work on DNA anymore. Linus Pauling is going to figure this out, or Rosalind Franklin is going to figure this out. You go back to the projects you're actually supposed to be working on. They, of course, completely ignored that, went back and put together the correct model of DNA, which is the double helix. But when they published the original paper in Nature suggesting the double helix model, they had to go out of their way to repudiate the triple helix, both their suggestion and Linus Pauling. And lest anyone forget, Linus Pauling is widely considered the greatest biochemist who ever lived. That's basically like starting off your paper saying, yeah, Einstein, usually right. Totally wrong right here.
Yeah, that was before he went off the rails with the whole vitamin C thing. But you're right. At the time,
I gotta think that something had to go a little quirky with Pauling. Like, you can't be that genius and not be a little bit crazy. And the crazy just latched on the vitamin C and never let go.
Yeah, it just didn't get any better. But at that time, you're absolutely right. He was incredibly highly regarded. You know, I'm going to have to look up and see what their vision of a triple. It sounds pretty. It sounds beautiful. I think a triple helix, it should exist. That would be cool.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what the Lilu had in Fifth Element. She had a triple helix, so clearly it's going to work out well if we ever pull it off.
Oh, yeah. You know, hey, I'm all in for the triple helix then. that's all right. Man, oh, well, that's cool. As always, a lot of interesting stuff with that. Interesting background. I am actually. I'm not kidding. I'm gonna have to go look up the triple helix because that just sounds too cool. What should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, when we come back next week, it's going to be Pi Day, March 14th.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it's going to be the Pi Day, the one where on March 14th, 2015, 3/14/15 at 9:26:53 a.m., it will be pi to 10 digits.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do a Pi Day question. A number of places have some really significant Pi Day celebrations. One of the most famous ones is Princeton, because Pi Day, for those that didn't know, a little bonus trivia, is also Albert Einstein's birthday, March 14th, and because Einstein taught at Princeton, they have a whole bunch of Pi festivities on March 14th. It also has an Albert Einstein lookalike contest. But the question is, one of the leading scientific universities in the world, not Princeton, they do other things for Pi Day, like to make Pi Day extra meaningful. They send out their admission letters on Pi Day. So that every nerd that ever, whether they qualify for this prestigious institution on Pi Day. So, what special world-renowned scientific institution admits students every year on Pi Day?
Huh, wow. Oh, that sounds very cool. I was not accepted there, wherever it was. They didn't send me one of those letters.
As an extra bonus, they have adapted this because there's a whole Pi Day, Tau Day debate whether Pi or Tau is a more meaningful scientific constant, Tau being equal to 2 Pi.
Yep.
So when they post in the mail the written letters at the beginning of the day on Pi Day, but they post the decisions online at 6:28 p.m., 6.28, double Pi, Tau, online on Pi Day. So they double down on the math nerdery.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a debate. We could get into the Pi-Tau debate. We do not have time today. I'm on the Tau. So I'm on Team Tau, though, I'll say. I like Pi for historical sentimental reasons, but I'm Team Tau. at any rate, Jay, I'm gonna let you go. I got a Rob Shot First, Robbie Rigel on deck here. He's chomping at the bit to get on here and talk science at us. But Jay, as always, thank you. It was awesome having you on and talking to you. And just a word out for people too is that, of course, Conglomeration is coming up soon. And if you want to get that discount for the Conglomeration Science Fiction Convention, Gaming Convention down in Louisville, Kentucky, if you remember, we were down there last year at this time. I don't think we're gonna make make it this year, but it's a great con to go to. It's actually, in fact, and it was one of the first ones I've been to. I think it's a great first con for people that are interested in that kind of thing. This is the time to sign up, because if you don't do it now, you're gonna have to pay extra. You know how much I hate that. So,
all right. Well, I appreciate the plug, and yes, everyone come to the convention and everyone listen to Rob Shot first.
All right. All right.
Hey, good going.
Take care, Jay. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Take care, Jay. Bye.
Jay Garman. JayGarman.net. You can always get more of him there. I'm going to do just like two quick cool sites of the week. Dave, don't run away, though. I've got the podcast-only song of the week. I've got it just for you. So the first, I promised friends of mine that this was going to be the cool site of the week this week. BitTorrent Sync. Have you heard of this, Dave?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. GetSync.com. Go there. If you have any interest or need for transmitting files on an internal network, keeping things synchronized, I know I'm a big fan of Dropbox as well. BitTorrent Sync, I like it even better. It's much more secure. You don't have to go outside of your network to transfer the stuff. It's awesome. So I'm going to give a big thumbs up to that. The other thing I'm going to do is a very Android-based thing. Car Dash Droid. I love this. It's so much better than the built-in car apps for your phone. You go in, you get in your car, it detects the Bluetooth, and boom, it brings up this very simple, easy-to-use screen so that while you're driving, you can much more easily manage your audio needs, your phone calls, and all that other stuff. Really good stuff. I'll put links to those up. Dave, do you have a cool site of the week you want to
share? I don't.
No.
Because I want the show to end on time.
All right. We're right there right now. I'm going to leave us with, this is an awesome song. It's just for Dave here. It's by Nathan Roche, Escargot, because it's all about driving fast cars and eating snails, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but, yeah, you should see that Escargot.
That's exactly right. So I'm going to leave you with that. Dave, Sparky Zaganagi, thanks for joining us today. We'll be back at you next week then, too.
Can't wait to see everybody. Take care. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dave Sparky Saganaki. And I wasn't kidding. This is Escargot by Nathan Roche. You're listening to WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Don't turn the dial. Rob Shot first. Robbie Rigel on next with some science in your ears. Nathan Roche, Escargot.